Hey, Jimmy, do you have that on tape? Because I was going to play it over and over and over on those dark, gloomy days when I'm just so full of myself. But how about nobody loves me? And then I could just hear Dolly say all these beautiful things about me, and it will make me get out of bed and want me to join the living race again, you know? That's how we are, right? No matter how long we're sober, ladies, I can only speak up to 26 years. My sobriety date is April 21st, 1986. I'm born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. My home group is Berea Wednesday Women. Has been my home group since I've come to you. You've taught me consistency. Important, consistency. My AA address. Know where you're going to be. People are going to come looking for you. They need to know where you're going to be. Consistency, working with others. People could hear your lead. Maybe there's somebody out here tonight. Now, we all know where Ruthie goes. So maybe somebody out here tonight, Ruthie touched them this morning. She'll be at Newburgh on Sunday. You heard that. That's her home group. You'll know to go find her or Carrie. You're going to hear Carrie. They'll be at their home group, you know. And if they're not there, they'll have a good reason. If you ask for them, they'll know who they are. And they'll tell you why they're not there. If I'm not at my home group, the girls will tell you what's going on with me. It's not like, oh, I don't know. I just don't know. You know, I'm accountable today. And you've taught me that. That's working with others. And we do that because you have worked with me. You have given me a life that is indescribably wonderful. And it is something that I had looked for all my entire life, right? Didn't you look for it in self-help books? Anybody a self-help booker when you're drinking, right? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I'm like drinking. I'm reading Leo Buscaglia's Loveling, Learning, whatever. Because I knew I was lacking love. Nobody was loving me. I was unlovable, right? You say? We learned that stuff here, but, you know, I'm drinking. I'm just, wow, that's a good idea. And then I had a little about it. What did I just read, right? So, and again, I've been so blessed that coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, there, and we all have them everywhere. There have been people in the rooms that made this so attractive that I was willing to try it. And, you know, I have my sponsor, Mary Beth. Many people know Mary Beth from this area. She's been my sponsor for 22 years. She could tell you more about me than I can tell you about me. So I'll tell you this, what we started laughing about when Dolly says Chris Heidel works with others, she takes them through the book. I'll share a funny story. Mary Beth, I get Mary Beth, that was one of the things, if she sponsored me, I have to pick her up and take her to her home group. That's what she did. So I pick her up and I get a bunch of newcomers and throw them in the car and I put Mary Beth in the front and then all of a sudden I'm in the rearview mirror and I'm talking to the newcomers. I'm giving the first 164 pages. And Mary Beth said, calm down, calm down. It's a 10-minute drive, Chris. You're not going to get it. She was trying to tone down my enthusiasm. She'd say, she'd look at the girls in the back and she'd say, don't worry, there'll be another speaker tonight. I have a gal, I just looked over here, I smiled. You know, I do this because I'm going to tell you, it re-energizes me. It re-energizes me to see you come alive. You got to watch me come alive, so confused, so broken, so wounded. We show up here so wounded. It's a spiritual illness. My spirit is broken. It's wounded. And I have no idea. I don't know that. I just come to stop drinking, right? Notice you guys are talking about this. Pray for people. And, you know, it just didn't even make sense. What does that have to do with my drinking? I couldn't even get it. You know, it took so long to come to. You know, they say we come to believe. It takes a while. But it was through your demonstrations and the way you conducted yourself and the way you carried yourself and that your eyes, there was something about your eyes and touch. We talked about love. I didn't know love. I didn't know love. I mean, I knew love in the fact that, you know, there was food in the refrigerator and there was a roof over our head. But the love that we have, that into the soul, that spiritual love, that genuine concern to make sure that you're on the right path, to give me that time, I didn't know that. And so, of course, when I would show up to you, I can't not say this, you know, you women. There's Emmy is here, and Emmy, I met Emmy in my first year of sobriety, and Emmy is still one of those women, and we have to give the accolades to the women and the people while they're alive, not when they're dead. Oh, wow, did you know about Emmy? You know, let's talk about them while they're alive, what they've done for us. I mean, because, you know, while we're still alive, you know, we could be like angels one day and devil next, you know. All we have to do is say no to the sponsee, and yeah, I hate hey, I defaced myself from Facebook because of that, right? Yeah, I don't want to hear about it. Anyways, I would watch Emmy, and she was the age that I am today. I just figured that out, 52 years old, 53. And when she walked into the room lit up. I swear, it was like angels were singing. And I thought, wow. And there was a gal in my home group, Marilyn Van Dusen, who introduced us to Emmy and Judy and Jan, all the gals over in the Youngstown area. And Marilyn believed in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm not religion, but you know what they say, if you give somebody fish, they'll eat for a day. If you teach someone to fish, they'll always have food, right? That's what we do. I don't become reliant on Emmy. I don't become reliant on Marilyn. Marilyn's passed away. Where would I be? We have to have a program of recovery. The fellowship is great. The fellowship is great. The fellowship, I liken it to the Browns football fans, you know. They're out there rooting for the Browns, but the Browns still have to run the game, right? And I still have to work the program of recovery, which is the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. But when I would see this light, so Marilyn had this light about her too. And I finally decided I'm going to go see what she has. She was so calm. I thought for sure she was on Valium. Did you guys ever have that? I mean, come on, newcomers. You see us, we walk around, you think, what? I started following her around, checking her medicine cabinet. I went to the bathroom, you know, because I'm still shaky. I don't have a sponsor yet. I'm just not quite sure. I was dry for 6 months before I finally joined you. That's a horrible place to be, by the way. And I went to the bathroom in her house. I finally decided, okay, they kept on saying, come on over, let's come for coffee. What in the world would I have to talk about? You know, of course, I would always decline. No, busy, got plans. But I decided to go, and I went to the bathroom. Do you know she had the 24-hour book on her toilet? And it was highlighted. Now, come on, newcomers. I think, oh, my God, they take this stuff seriously. I mean, I have no idea what we're doing here. You know, I'm just showing up. I have no idea. But yeah, it was through your love and gentle kindness that led me through the steps of the program so I can have that spiritual awakening. I can have that awakened spirit that will meet any catastrophe, that would meet any storm, that will give me the strength and the faith that I need to know that, yeah, when the storm is over, there's going to be something on the other side. And I believe it is our responsibility to make sure that we can at least help the newcomer with that idea, that they can find out what the book says. And this, you know, working with others, we know it's all about taking them through the steps. And I'm not going to give you a step workshop. There's all kinds of people who do a great job for that, and that's not what I'm here for. Besides, I have 45 minutes. But what I have done for you, because I don't want you to feel cheated, we have a gal, Michael Earl, from Atlanta, and she's done this for us. She has put this work together for us in many different workshops. It's called Journey Through the Steps. And page, it will take you all the pages and the readings in the big book, step 1 through 12. So I have only made 100 copies. I am hoping that those who do not have computers will take the 100 copies. Those who do have computers will leave your email address right over here so I can email it to you. It's much more, it's expensive to copy all those. So please, don't cheat yourself, big book. There he is. Janine's got the email thing. But these are going to be right over here for you. And really, I would not cheat yourself on doing that. So let's talk about working with others. Hey. That's helpful. So Dolly has done this, huh? Over and over again. Trust God, clean house, help others. On the back it says, your job now is to be at the place where you can be of maximum helpfulness to others. Never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. I love this one. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking than intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. I mean, this is really where it's at. You know, I was listening to a gal. It was a gal that I sponsored. And she was just getting tired of the meetings. The same old stories. Judging the comments. Oh, God, she's going to make that comment again. Knowing what the lead's going to say. And so I said to her, I said, you know what? You've not heard what we have said to you. You are not going to learn anything else about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous until you start to give it away to others. As you share your experience and take people through the book, your spirit becomes light again. That's where it comes. There's nothing else you're going to learn. It's about giving it back to other people, to watch people come alive, to watch them. You know, we were sitting at a coffee shop, Dawn and I, and Dawn has 7.5 months, by the way. I said, she's got 7 months. She has 8 months, almost eight. So we're sitting at a Starbucks coffee shop. There's a newcomer who's having difficulty. This is just about 3 weeks ago. I'm getting ready to lead a meeting. And the newcomer's really struggling with this whole program. But we had her, right? Because we were talking about the spiritual alignment. We're talking about what the program is designed to do. It's designed to get us back in touch with that spirit that we were born with. It's, you know, in the book it says the bottles were just a symptom that we need to get rid of the things that have been blocking us. Blocking us from what? The sunlight of the spirit. What has been blocking my soul? Resentment, fear, of all the things we talk about in the inventory. I said, the program is designed for you to get back in touch with what does this mean to you? You don't have to understand it. You don't have to identify it. It says, I come to believe that there's something greater than me. And as we talked, I could see she was getting closer to the edge of her chair. And she's looking at me like this. And I said, the program is designed to unblock you so you can be a vessel and you can be free from yourself. The whole thing is to free you from you. And she said, wow. I don't get that from my therapist. So what was funny that night when I led the meeting, of course I was all pumped up because that's what happens when we get newcomers turned on to this idea, right? I'm on the meeting and I said, and we have to be careful that we don't like boast ourselves as the long timer and say, well, for $10 more, I'll give you some more. You know? I'll tell you, that night, a guy came up to the podium. They were sitting there. He put $10 on the table, and he said it was worth every penny of it. We are not a glum lot. Yes, we hurt, and there's steps designed to help us cry and help us reestablish those relationships or put a new perspective on those relationships so we can get out there and live today, so we can be free, so we can be free of ourselves. Because the whole thing, resentment is fear. It's self. Isn't it self? It affects me. Resentment affects me. Isn't that self? Fear affects me. You know, we talk about love. Either we are acting in love or we are acting in fear. Fear lives in ego and love lives in God. And every time I turn back to God for direction, I don't like the direction that he gives me because I don't even see the benefit in it, truly. God's vision for me is so much better than my vision. I have, like, limited. He has peripheral vision. Right? And I would go someplace that I wasn't expected to go to, and I really didn't even want to go to it. I remember, you know, after a while you get tired of going to the jails all the time, right? It's like I'd call my sponsor. I'm like, can't somebody else do this? My God, I'm 20 years sober and I'm still going in there, and I'm having a hard time getting off work and getting there. And, you know, where's all these other people? How come they're not carrying the message down into the prison? And then it's almost like, on the way home, I call and I'm like, oh my God, you don't know what happened. It was so wonderful. Right? That's why we work with others, right? I mean, we've had so much fun working with others. I could tell stories and stories, but I really want to give a little bit of the book because that's what the first hour is designed for. The second 2 hours, we're going to have some long-timers sharing their experience, their story of working with others. And then we have an Ask It basket over here. So if you're struggling with anything, you have questions, write it on a piece of paper, throw it in the box. And that's anonymous. You don't even have to put your name on it. And the panel or someone else here will help you with that. We want you to go away with the solution. We want you to know this is what this program is all about. If we think about Bill Wilson, 6 months sober he was, 6 months sober. He's in Akron, Ohio. He's looking for a business that this time it's going to put him on his feet. He's going to get back in life again. Financially, he's going to be set. The business goes bad. 6 months sober. Could you imagine? He's in Akron, Ohio. Now, what would you think a 6 months sober alcoholic? Huh? Yeah. I'm feeling horrible. Another blow. I'm out of town. Huh? Don't you love being out of town? And then your mind says, oh, they won't know. Well, if you're a real alcoholic, they're going to know because they're going to have to come to Akron to get me out of jail. Find me on the railroad tracks. Send me a ticket, bus ticket or something. Somehow they're going to know. Because once, you know, we already know what real alcoholic is once I take that drink, you know, that body takes over. And I am in possession of the beast. And I'm not done with that beast until that beast is done with me. They'll tell me when I'm done. So being convinced that I'm alcoholic, he knew that he had to find somebody else in that town to talk to. Surely there must be someone that I can talk to with an alcoholic problem. And through several phone calls, he would end up with Dr. Bob. And that's where the spark would flare in Akron, Ohio. Two people, 1935, 76 years later, we're in third world countries where our people were fighting at war. The American soldiers are taking AA in there. Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, represented at the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. Do I need to go outside this book for any material? If it can penetrate walls like that, it certainly could help with my little problem. This thing works. The greatest spiritual movement of the 20th century. This thing works. That's why it grows. And so, it says, in working with others, I'm going to go through the book a little bit. And I've just took a couple things from the forward to the second edition. And here it says, the spark that was to flare into the first AA group was struck at Akron, Ohio in 1935. Can you imagine, you guys? Do you know how close we are to Akron, Ohio right now? Do you know that you are less than an hour away from going to that same hotel where Bill Wilson was and picking up that phone at the Mayflower Hotel? It's still there. It's not a hotel anymore. Do you see how close we are? We're like right in the Bible Belt of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is here. And do you know how many people are dying of untreated alcoholism? It's crazy to me. But to me, it turned me on so much. I was amazed that it was right here. There was just something authentic about that. During a talk between a New York stockbroker and an Akron physician, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, 6 months earlier, See, Bill Wilson, 6 months. So for those of you who think, oh, I don't have a year yet, I can't sponsor or I can't help anybody, Bill was 6 months sober when the program of Alcoholics Anonymous would come to be. So don't cheat yourself on that. You know, if you have 1 week, you have something to share with the new person that's coming in. We see it at the Edna House, with Jean Marie House, all the treatment centers. You be there. Offer yourself. Remember what it was when you were that girl that was coming through that door for the very first day, sick and scared and alone. You can share your week that you have with them. So, and you'll be amazed what happens. 6 months earlier, the broker had been relieved of his drink obsession by a sudden spiritual experience following a meeting with an alcoholic friend who had been in contact with the Oxford group of that day, which was Ebbie Thatcher. And I love, you know, a little bit of the history. We talk about that. And Dolly, I think I want to leave that to you. But I, you know, just when we talk about, no, I'm going to do it. So when we talk So when we talk about the history, I used to hear, brruh, 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 yeah. I'm like, get to the meat and potatoes of it. But I'm like amazed that these were real people just like us. It's like the day we realized that our parents were people. So we talk about Roland Hazard, who, you know, Roland Hazard was... He was a drunk, and they were going to just send him to a psychologist, and they tried to get a hold of Freud, and Freud would send him to Jung, who started. Could you imagine if he went to Freud? Freud always thought everything was a sexual experience. How would our 11-step read? And so he tells them that, you know, once in a while, cases like yours, and he talks about, you know, a spiritual, this is what he would need is a spiritual awakening. And so Roland would eventually, through several times, he would come back to town, and he gets in touch with Ebbie Thatcher, who was a friend of hers, and Ebbie Thatcher, he had gotten word that Ebbie was in trouble. Now, Ebbie was in trouble because, A, he got drunk and he drove his car through someone's kitchen. Doesn't that sound like something we would do today? And while he was sitting in the kitchen drunk, he asked for a cup of coffee in his car. Now, see, I get interested in people like that. That's why it's good to know the history. And then so he would go to, and then what really got him in trouble is he started to paint his house. You know, as alcoholics, we start to paint, we start to drink, we only get a couple things done. And the pigeons started to crap on his house. And he pulled out a shotgun and started shooting at the pigeons. So there he's back in jail, you know, the mayor's. And Roland goes to the mayor and says, can you release him to me? Can you release him to me? And he took him the tenets of the Oxford group. And that's on page 263 in the fourth edition of the book. And the tenets of the Oxford group, pretty much, you know, a short version, I'm going to read them. Complete deflation, dependence and guidance from a higher power, moral inventory, confession, restitution, continued work with other alcoholics. So Ebbie heard about his friend Bill having some problems, and so that's where he went to go see Bill. And then Bill, through that, would end up with Bob. So I love that little bit there. You can expound on it. There's a lot of great material out there to read about it. But that's what it is, because he found hope. He went to go help Bill. Bill found hope. He knew he was in trouble. When everything, the cards start to fly, anxiety start to rise, fear starts to take over, he picked up the phone to find another alcoholic in Akron, Ohio to call. That same thing happens today with the girls that I sponsor. That happens with me. When I'm afraid or when I'm full of anxiety or I feel overwhelmed, I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I pray for guidance. I talk to my sponsor. I share everything with my sponsor. She knows, like I said, more about me than anybody. And what's so good about that is when life starts to happen as it will happen, life happens. My sponsor knows how I'm going to respond to that. She knows exactly what's going on with me because I've been open with her. I've shared myself. I've been vulnerable. I've been intimate. Intimacy. Into-me-see. I let her be part of me. And I never did that to anyone. They have a way of sneaking in anyway without your permission. You know, they ask questions and you just think, eh, we were just passing some time as we're driving to the meeting. 2 weeks later, she brings it back up, you know. Okay, and so it goes on to say, he had been greatly helped by the late Dr. Silkworth, and from this the broker had learned the grave nature of alcoholism. And so we must show that. What is the grave nature of alcoholism? And so when we talk about it, we always talk about it as, you know, the phenomenon of craving coupled with the mental obsession. And they always say that it starts in the mind first. It never starts here. Once I take it, then it's over. But my mind somehow convinced me that I can take it one more time. And so therefore, the problem centers in the mind. And so if we, you know, when we learn these things, and of course, that doesn't mean that I can like try a little TM, right? How many? Try a little transcendental meditation, and I'll train my mind not to drink or to control my drinking. We must know that in our innermost selves that once we take a drink, it's over. There's no controlling it. It's like my sponsors explained to me when I was new. Eat a box of X-Lax and see how much control you have over it, you know? Of course, I looked at her with this look like, who would eat a box of X-Lax? But isn't it the same with me? If I would take a drink, who would take a drink knowing that you're going to black out, wreck your car? Because I always thought it was going to be different. We don't go out there to do that. I don't go out there, hey, I think I'm going to go burn down my mom's house tonight. Sounds like a good idea. You know, things like that happen when I drink. They're accidents. I mean, I'm like an accident waiting to happen. Anyway, so the other thing is I want to talk about the foreword to the third edition. In spite of the great increase in the size and the span of this fellowship, at its core, it remains simple and personal. Each day, somewhere in the world, recovery begins when one alcoholic talks with another alcoholic, sharing experience, strength, and hope. I am not to talk about above my experience. If I don't have children, I send my girls who have children to people who have children because I don't know what it's like. If I'm not married, I'm not going to give marriage advice. I can talk about the program of recovery in relationships, what it is you think you need, you should give, what it is you think you're lacking, you should give. Are you doing your part? What, you know, we bring out the worst in people. What am I doing to poke the tiger at home? I mean, we know each other's hot spots. You know, can I treat the people at home the way you treat me in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? Can I take them the same consideration and give them the time? The time, we talked about that time. T-I-M-E, things I must earn. It takes time. We run three people through the gutter. We're not going to get their respect like that. It takes time to learn to get those things. But as we grow, we don't even care about getting that back. The joy that we get from this whole spiritual awakening, you can't shut us up. We're on fire. We get excited. It's better than any drink or drug I ever had in my life. You know, the only difference between that, I remember telling my sponsor, geez, this thing is amazing. I feel so great. The last time I felt this way, I was cutting school. I was down at the park. I was smoking a little bit and drinking, and I could just feel the water. You know how you are. You get connected to nature. But I was like, there was fear. The ranger was coming and the cops were coming. So I couldn't really enjoy it, you know. And today I get that same calming of my spirit. That's what I was looking for, peace, through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and that connection with God. And so I always say, don't cheat yourself if you're here. Don't cheat yourself from allowing your sponsor to take you through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that is the program. The program, it says, these are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. This is the fellowship. You'll cheer me on, but I've got to take the steps. I've got to do the work. Because that's got to come from in here. I think of it like a plunger. You just clearing out the blockage, you know. But I'm the one who's got that blockage in there. My sponsors don't know where to hit the plunger, right? Only I know. And it comes. The answers come. You've just got to hurt bad enough. It's got to be the right kind of pain to say that I don't want this anymore. I don't want broken relationships. I do not want to not feel a part of. I do not want to not be intimate. I want to be part of you. I want what Emmy has. I want what Marilyn has. So I'll do what you do. And this is what we do. Tuesday, you're going to Parmadale. Because I was 26 years old when I came here, and I started drinking when I was 11, 14 years. I think I met my twin sister last night, who led. And I had been through the ringer through that, because as a young kid, I'm stupid. I end up in a lot of crazy places, right? And so she would start with me, not with the adults. She took me to the children's home to start taking the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to the children, you know. They knew exactly how to work with me. And so I would start working with the teenagers and start sponsoring them and giving them and starting to feel them starting to come alive and get connected. So when I go on to page... I love the doctors. We all love the doctor's opinion. If you go into the Jean Marie house or the Edna house, these little three-quarter way houses or whatever, you know, you want to go into the doctor's opinion, you can see them roll their eyes like, ugh. Smoke my eyes out. Because people are taking groups in there because their sponsor told them to, you know, and they don't know what to do, and they're just like, okay, we're going to go to the doctor's opinion. That's where we're going to go. So when we share, though, we share with heart and we show our passion and we share with love. You know, we share our experience, not what the book says, but our experience, so that that can become their experience, finding themselves in the black print of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so in the doctor's opinion... I like when it says, the doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol. That's what we have, an allergy to alcohol. I break out in alcohol. I break out in all kinds of places. What do you say? You broke out in spots. My sponsor breaks out in West Virginia, Florida. I never traveled that far. One time I came to in Maui. And I was wrapped in like a toga party or something. I had noxzema from head to toe. I had a sheet wrapped around me. And evidently my husband, I had pushed up on the locos too much that night, and he was disgusted. But yet, even though I was sunburned from head to toe, he gently wrapped me up before he left me. That's why he didn't go to Al-Anon. He knew the trick on how to do that, right? So we have an allergy to alcohol. Though we work out our solution on the spiritual as well as the altruistic plane, we favor hospitalization for the alcoholic who is very jittery or befogged. More often than not, it is imperative that a man's brain be cleared before he is approached, as he has then a better chance of understanding and accepting what we have to offer. I mean, let's not forget, we still have to have detox centers. We can't just start feeding them, hey, have you heard about God? I remember one time I was out. No, did you ever have an over-enthusiast AA member trying to get you when you were drunk in the bar, like laying on the toilet seat, right? Hey, you need to find God. Like, you know, that just felt like a cult to me, you know, like, we've got to let the brain, we've got to be physically, we got to like clear the mind a little bit, because I have no idea what you're saying when you're coming at me like that. And we have great detox centers now that can do those jobs. We don't have to do them, but many people do that. We don't have to let them go there before we start working the steps with them. Like, offer them the fellowship and the friendship. Take them to meetings. Show up. Check on them. How you doing today? Can I get you a cup of coffee? Can I get you a pack of cigarettes? You know, offer them that before you can even start even taking them through the steps, you know. It says, many years ago, one of the leading contributors to this book came under our care in the hospital. And while here, he acquired some ideas which he put into practical application. Later, he requested the privilege of being allowed to tell his story to other patients here. And with some misgivings, we consented. The cases we have followed through have been most interesting. In fact, many of them are amazing. And this is what I love. The unselfishness of these men have we have come to know them. The entire absence of profit motive. Their community spirit is indeed inspiring to one who has labored long and wearily in the alcoholic field. They believe in themselves and still more in the power which pulls chronic alcoholics back from the gates of death. And that's what we believe in. I believe in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're an alcoholic, like I'm an alcoholic, that once you take the first one, all bets are off. We just know there's going to be a second one. If you're an alcoholic of that type, there's a program that works for you. And if I can help you with this program to help it fit you, to fit to your size, you know, I will do that for you. But you're the one who has to admit to your innermost self that you're alcoholic. You know, I can give this program to, a sex addict, and, they're not, if they can't identify with it, you got to make sure that you're dealing with the right illness here, right? You have to make sure that they're convinced that they're alcoholic by presenting them the questions and telling them, what is alcoholism? Can you find yourself in this? Has this happened to you before? As they talk about, the real alcoholic in the book. On page 9, I love when Bill says Ebby shows up at his door when Ebby makes the call. And Bill and Ebby were drinking buddies, and the last time he remembered him, they were on a drunken jag. And he heard something about, he was an alcoholic crackpot, something happened, he had gotten locked up, his friend. But then Ebby called Bill after getting this spirit. And he said, I'd like to come and visit. And with some, and Bill was excited about him coming to visit, And he was thinking, unselfish of his welfare. He was only remembering, capturing the moments of the past. He pushed a drink his way. You girls, you newcomers know this. When we show up with the people that we used to hang out with, they don't know that it's not okay to push something our way. So you should always go with somebody who has longer time sobriety. Back then it wasn't, Alcoholics Anonymous hadn't even been founded yet. But today, never go there alone. We don't know how, especially, only sober a few months, how easy it would be to sit down and just, okay, I'll have this drink. I'm in New York. Nobody will know. I'll start tomorrow. So we have to be, that to me is huge. We have to be mindful of the people that are around us. Believe it or not, it's not that they don't have our best interest in mind. They really misunderstand alcoholism. They don't understand. I mean, my mother, who went through it all with me, would say, well, surely you can just have a glass of wine. Now, my sister, on the other hand, who thinks we make entirely too much of anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, can't you just make a decision? Do you really just have to pray about it, talk to your sponsor, journal? You guys make too big of an issue of everything. Can't you just make a decision and go with it, At 19 years sober, when I would hit the dark stage of my life in sobriety, a big turning point, we all talk about, as religious people call it, the dark night of the soul, and all I have to hold on to is faith when everything is ripped out. My sister, of me being 19 years sober, that same sister would say to me, Christine, whatever you do, please don't pick up a drink. 19 years, she does not forget. She did not forget. They remember. They absolutely remember. And so then it says, what Bill seen about Emmy was his eyes. Remember I talked about Emmy's eyes, Emmy's spirit, Marilyn's eyes, Marilyn's spirit. There was something about them that I had never seen before. And that's exactly what Bill talked about. There was something inexplicably, unexplainably different. And of course he was interested. And so he let him talk, and it says he did no ranting. In a matter-of-fact way, he told how two men had appeared in court, persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. Remember, because he was going to be going to jail for shooting the pigeon, right? And Roland said, bring him to me. Let us help him. And so he goes on to share. But the whole thing is that it says, and he would share his experience if I cared to have it. I can't, like, you know, try to feed it to somebody who's really not interested and then wonder why, wow, none of these 12 steps are going anyplace. They're not interested. You have to make sure the person is interested in having it. It says, I was shocked but interested. Certainly, I was interested. I had to be, for I was hopeless. And this is a, you know, this is an illness, a disease, a malady, spiritual malady, that we really have to be to that hopeless place. We have to be, you know, most alcoholics have to be pretty badly mangled before we admit defeat. You know, what does that mean? Think of the words they use to describe alcoholism. Mangled is huge. Mangled is a huge word. They use the word handicap with us, with our emotions, that we're sensitive. And it makes us, and it takes many of us a long time to outgrow this serious handicap. They use sensitive and handicap in pretty much the same context. I mean, so when we talk about our emotions and our feelings, and I loved, you know, how many people had the feelings paper that Roberta talked about yesterday. I certainly had one. I had no idea what I was feeling, you know. Fine was good for me. I was feeling fine, you know. I wasn't living in the rearview mirror of life anymore. That was good. I didn't have to worry about anything anymore. That was good. So it says I had to because I was hopeless. And so, and then it goes on to tell Bill, you know, he talks about the spirit. He talks about alcoholism as we know it. He talks about this utter inability to leave it alone. And then he talks about the spirit, you know, and he tells Bill, you know, we have to find a power greater than ourselves where we can recreate our lives. And Bill said, oh, you know, his hopes started to fall. We know that. How many of us that my hopes fell? You know, when you were talking about your alcoholism, I can identify it. In treatment, I can hear the car wrecks, and I'm telling people stuff that I never told about, you know, oh my God, sneaking out of the hotel room on Brook Park Road at 4 o'clock in the morning, hoping nobody's seen me. Those stories I never told anybody. Now I'm telling everybody in treatment. We're all sharing our stories, you know. We're sick as the secrets we keep. Now we start sharing those stories, you know. And that was exciting to me. I can connect. I can be free. I can talk about those things. But the minute you talk to power greater than yourself, that it doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for me. And for me, you know, I often think about, as a young child, I was always searching for something. And oftentimes I would wander into churches. Bums do that. You know, bums, you know how we are. Like, you see them. You have skid rows everywhere you live. And I was born and raised over on skid row. So I wandered into this church one time. It was a Catholic church. It was on 45th and Franklin, really down in the hood. And it happened to be on Palm Sunday. And not being of any religious background, I had absolutely no idea what was going on. And I desperately went in there for a fix. And I felt that, see, this doesn't work for me. But when you presented it in a spiritual alignment, when you talked about page 52, deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It is always there. When you talked about it, when you were born with the Spirit, I was thinking of it more of something outside of me that I had to get. And I would never get it. But what you were saying is, Christine, you already have it. That's religion. There's religious practices that we do for that. But that is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about that gut, that answer, that soul. We're talking about your soul. I had absolutely no idea, but you gave me hope. And right there, I mean, we have a whole chapter about we agnostics, how many newcomers we lose when it comes to that. So we have to be careful when we're working with others that we differentiate what this is really about. We have to make sure that, you know, get a background. It says it's so clear cut directions in working with others. Get a background of their, you know, tell me about your religion. Tell me about your experiences. I love the girl over here. She's been dunked and had healing and everything else. So none of that stuff worked for her. It wasn't until she came to Alcoholics Anonymous and people were talking her language and she could identify with that. Was she able to connect and find hope? And I'm going to tell you, once hope is found on one of us, there's no stopping us, right? Look at Dolly. Is she crazy? I mean, come on. I mean, who gets applause for reading How It Works? It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And so then it says what Ebby said to Bill that day. And I, you know, again, I don't even have to go beyond these pages because this has not changed in all these years. It has not changed. What Ebby, and Bill got a little bit of hope and he got a little bit excited. And what Ebby said to Bill is, my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. And I love this, you guys. This is how we grow spiritually. Page 14. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others. What did it just say? I'm going to grow spiritually through work and self-sacrifice for others. He could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. What's it telling me? It's telling me life is going to happen. There's going to be illnesses. There's going to be divorce. There's going to be sick. There, you know, it's not like we get sober and, oh, life never happens, you know. Life shows up. When I stop drinking, life shows up. And there's a lot of work to do. But that's why we are emphatic that we have a good spiritual, we have a good foundation. We always talk about good foundations. We're good on foundations. Make sure your house has a good foundation. It has, you know, because the winds of life are going to happen. And is it going to blow you over? Or are you going to be able to go back to those beginnings, look well to your beginnings, when you didn't pick up a drink and you went to a meeting and you sat it out and you're talking to a newcomer? You know, I'm at 19 years sober when this darkness hits me and I'm thinking, you know, I'm mad at God. I'm like, I've done everything you wanted. I have sacrificed my entire life for you and this is what you give me. I could do that to my God. And then I get on my knees and I say, thank you for helping me stay sober. I mean, it's okay for me to get mad at God. I'm still talking to God. That's what I was taught, you know. I don't have to pretend it doesn't happen. And I remember then a new girl I was working with, real sick alcoholic. God is so good to us, right? He gives you the sickest ones when life is going on to work with. Real sick one, just out of jail for the 16th time. Chris. She's over at the house. Can you come and get me and go see my kids today? I'm living in Medina, so let me just tell you, the mileage is an hour to go pick her up, take her to see her kids, drive home, and then go back later, pick her up, take her back to the Edna house to check in, and then take her to a meeting. And I do it. And I'm thinking, Jesus, I'm sitting here thinking of suicide, and you want me to go give you a ride to go talk to the kids that you shouldn't even have, you know? Hey, you can think what you want as long as your feet move in the right direction. And so I pick her up, I get her in the car, and I'm plugging this spiritual way of life. And I said, it's not too late. You've got a whole life ahead of you. You've got children. You've got a whole life. You can give them children. It's not too late. And I think I can't rebuild my own life at 19 years sober. See, it's through working with others that I can hear your voice, huh? Through working with her, I got hope that it was going to be okay again. And when we go through these dark times, I remember it was this time of year, it was in the fall, and it was really gray. You know when those heavy times hit and all you feel is heavy, gray? You don't feel color, you don't feel joy, you don't feel strong, you're just heavy, you know? And I would get on my knees and I would pray, God, please let me feel the color again. Let me hear the song again. And I'm going to tell you, at those most darkest points of your life is when we become the most creative. And I found that the only thing my heart really desires is peace and joy. I have everything I've ever prayed for that day. I wish I would have prayed for a little more, but that's just the alcoholic in me, you know. Anyway, so it works. It really works. You know, I just shared working with others how it works us in dark times, you know. I got to share a couple of stories of working with others. I'm going to leave the book alone. The book is there. And the journey through the steps will take you through every page I was going to highlight. But I want to talk about a couple girls in the room today. There's one girl that I sponsored. We used to call her Daffodil because she'd always come in the spring and she'd peter out by Founders Day. Just call her Daffodil, you know, and we always had hope. And then, you know, this gal has, you know, 10 years of sobriety now, you know, but it took her 15 years to get 10 years, you know. And those days that you think that she's going to be out there dead, that she's not going to make it back. And I remember, you know, we were always so happy. We applaud. We give them a coin, a chip. She had so many chips she could have her own poker game, you know. I said, one time we were low on white chips. I said, hey, can you bring them back? We need them for the newcomer. And but now, you know, this girl is happy and sober. And the thing what's so funny is that she feels sorry for me. Like, there's times that she's, like, depressed and she doesn't want to leave her house. And, you know, and she's feeling sorry for me that I'm being taken advantage by all these newcomers. You know, they're using her for her rides and this and that. And I just think it's funny because, you know, we think that's what it's about, but it isn't. It is in giving we receive. I get a newcomer. Come in the car, we're laughing, we're talking, we're carrying on, and the people who's feeling sorry for me at home, depressed, want to die, be a suicide. I'm like, get in the car with me, come and let's get a couple of the new girls. I have another gal here, she's beautiful, she's sober now, Fangly, thank you God. You know, sometimes, you know, those girls that you're so happy that when they go to jail, it's like, whew, thank you, because you know that's the only way they're going to get clean and sober, right? You're just so happy. It's like, yes, she's arrested. Thank you, God. Then you get the phone call. She was released. Oh, no. But this gal's sober now. But I'll tell you, I met this gal when we were at the prison pre-release doing Big Book. And I met her the day after she got out of prison. She went to a homeless shelter. And I said, we're coming to pick you up. And we're hustlers out there. This girl was hustled. She hustled the homeless shelter to get a voicemail. First day, I call there to pick, say, I'm on my way to pick you up. I get the, hi, this is, I won't say the person's name. I've stepped away from my desk. Please leave a message. This is your sponsor. You don't have a desk. You're homeless. Change that. I'm on my way. You know. The shame, the degradation, the remorse, just trying to pretend that we're something that we're not, you know, living a lie. Here's about living and being free, you know. And so later on, this gal would not, you know, she was not having me at all. She was fighting me all the way. And so one day I just got her in the car. She must have thought I was going to give her a free meal or something. And I took her to the local diner. This is funny. I took her to the local diner. I threw her in a booth. She said, I'm so tired. Can I go to bed? No. You can't go to bed. We're going through page 84 through 88 because you're making a lot of mistakes and you need to know how to clean them up. And I made her sit there to go through the daily program, the AM, PM prayer, how to do inventory. Because if you go back out, you need to know that Alcoholics Anonymous works. You didn't work Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not that Alcoholics Anonymous didn't work. This gal is sober now. I mean, she would go back to prison, had some devastation happen in her life. But she's sober now. And I think she sponsors girls like that. I got to go over to that cafe. So she's got a couple of them pinned in the booth, you know. So we just never know, you know. You know, seeds, you plant the seeds and sometimes they just take a long time to sprout. So, you know, I'm good here. This is beautiful. I, you know, working with others, I kind of like shared with you the importance of it. And you never know. I mean, you might go to Aruba, as we heard last night. You know, you never know what God has in store for you. So we're going to close down for lunch. We're going to come back at 2:00 and we're going to have the panel. And don't forget, if you have any questions, write them down. Emails over here. Those who don't have emails, let me know. I'll give you a pamphlet of work, Journey Through the Steps. Have a great lunch. Aww.